So my first question is, what was the first impulse that started the whole process? I know the process has been quite long, and the whole process, which in the end led also, among other things, to the establishment of the CCUs in Scotland.
So the initial prompt was a series of critical reports by external agencies like Her Majesty's Inspector of Prisons and other independent inspection bodies who criticised government and SPS for a lack of investment in the women's estate, a lack of a direct strategy for women. Women only account for a very small proportion of the Scottish prison population. But there was no specific strategy identified for them. So Scottish government set up a commission to look at how women were managed across justice. And that commission, the Commission on Women Offenders, published its recommendations in 2012. That became known as the Angelini Report because it was led by Dame Eilish Angelini. The Angelini Report made a number of recommendations for how women should be managed appropriately right throughout the justice system in Scotland. But a number of those recommendations were also specifically for the Scottish Prison Service. So the Angelini report was really the genesis of everything that we would subsequently do over the coming years. The process for managing women or the approach had a bit of a false start to begin with because government plans, one of the key recommendations was that Scotland's only women's prison, Cornton Vale, should be closed and a new facility should be built. The recommendation said that a new facility should be built for the highest need, highest risk women, which would be a relatively small number, and that regional units should be used to house women closer to their home communities. The original plans that government and SPS moved forward with was for one national prison to house all women, approximately 400 at that point in time. That came under a fair bit of pressure from interest groups and NGOs who were of the view that this isn't in keeping with the recommendations or the spirit of the recommendations. And in 2015, we had a change of direction. We had a new Minister for Justice come into post, and he announced that he was cancelling the plans for the National Women's Prison, and he wanted Scotland to take a new innovative and radical approach for how we manage women. So from there, we moved towards a new phase of the project. We SPS hosted an international symposium, which is the documents available online, where we invited practitioners and academics from across Europe to Scotland for a week to talk about good practice in managing women. And from there, we began to shape our strategy, which ultimately resulted in HMP Stirling and the community custody units, as well as a new strategy for women.
Okay. So there was also like this political change on the post of the Minister of Justice, and that gave it a kind of a new direction in 2015, yeah.
He really, the new minister really sort of challenged SPS to, he told us he wanted a transformative and world-leading approach for women. So the team, and this predates my time on the team, but the team were really empowered to think differently, to look at solutions outside the norm. So, that's really where the concept of the CCUs came from. There was a lot of research that then went in on the back of the symposium about what would work for women. And actually, a lot of the same research that informs the rescaled approach to small-scale detention houses, we never looked at it from the perspective of a small-scale detention house. We looked at it from a perspective of what would work for women, given their unique challenges and the different pathways that women often follow to find themselves in prison. But we, if effectively following the same research from a different lens, took us to the same conclusion.
To the same conclusion. And could you maybe explain what are the key principles, when you about this new strategy, new approach towards incarcerated women. What would you say that there are the key principles that are new? What's the change?
So the key difference, apologies, I was just plugging my laptop in there. The key difference really is, it can be kind of summed up in two concepts. The new approach for women needed to be gender specific and it needed to be trauma informed. So by gender specific, we mean that it had to take account of the fact that often women's pathways into offending differs from men's pathways. So it stands to reason that their pathways out to, towards living a life away from criminality would be different. We had to take into account the, unique life experiences and needs of women in order to inform the approach, rather than trying to adopt an approach that was developed for 8,000 men and, trying to make it specific or trying to adapt it for the 400 women. We needed to do something that specifically took account of their needs. The second part was really critical because the part about being trauma informed, the prevalence of trauma among the prison population is higher than it is in the general public. I think anybody who works with people in contact with justice knows that. But the prevalence of traumatic experiences among women is higher again than in men. So the kind of life circumstances that lead women into offending can be quite significant. And we know that if scary things have happened to you in your life, the world can be a really scary place. That can cause people to react in ways that are disproportionate to the circumstances, and it can cause people to display challenging behaviours. And for years as a prison system, we've been taught how to respond to challenging behaviours. We deal with it in a very specific, prescribed way. But actually for people that have got, and I don't just mean specific to women, but for people that have got significant traumatic experiences, that's often their way of communicating distress. So we've not been speaking the same language as the people that we're supposed to be looking after. They're communicating their distress by acting out, and we've not, as an organisation, been trained to understand that. So it was about understanding that trauma response, how that manifests, and actually how we can do things differently to try and minimise the impact.
Thank you
So
for explaining.
when we say being trauma informed, it's about understanding the impact of that, and the kind of five principles of trauma recovery run about, safety. That's being psychologically safe, understanding that people that have suffered trauma are often kind of hyper aware of possible danger, understanding the impact that a traditional prison environment can have on somebody who's in that state, banging doors, blind corners, unknown people coming into your room, your personal space. So understanding those things and trying to mitigate the impact of them, while at the same time empowering women, helping them develop their own agency, their self-efficacy, trying to build trust between women and the people that they're going to work with. And crucially, trying to implement as much choice and collaboration into our approach as we possibly could. And that those principles really underpinned everything we did going forward, from the physical design of the establishments through to how they would operate in practice.
Thank you. And maybe one question about the process itself, like when you were drafting the new strategy, how did that look like? Which groups were involved?
So the lead for actually drafting the final version of the strategy was the Governor of Cornton Vale at the time, Jacqueline Clinton, my boss at the time. It really was an iterative process. When we'd set up the project to manage the whole approach for opening the new prisons, we had a project board, but we also had an advisory board who were key experts or key people from different agencies. So it wasn't just SPS looking at it. We had key people from the various NGOs that are in, we call them third sector agencies in Scotland, but so organisations like Families Outside, who are the major charity in Scotland which support families of people in prison. We had people from different third sector. There's an umbrella group in Scotland called the Criminal Justice Voluntary Sector Forum. So it's lead people from a lot of these NGOs. So we had input from them. So they had an input and a voice. They were a sort of sounding board for everything we did, and they were involved in the iterative process of actually building up the strategy. So they saw initial drafts and they fed back to them. And it really was an iterative process that took place probably over the course of a full year to get from actually writing that finalized strategy that we published, because we knew what we wanted to do and we had various documents and pieces of evidence supporting it. We had descriptions of what the new model of custody, as we called it, would look like, but we didn't have one overarching strategic document that says from beginning to end, this is what we're trying to do, and this is how we're going to do it, and this is how we'll measure success. So that was a year-long process because it went through a number of iterations following feedback from those key partners.
How long did it take the process?
It was probably just under a year all in, from Jackie sitting down and putting pen to paper and collating that first draft to actually a final published version, was probably just under a year, if I remember rightly.
It's not that long. And did you at certain stage involve also the women with lived experience as well in the process?
So that ties back to the choice and collaboration piece that I spoke to you about. So the women's voice was a really integral part to every stage of the process. So it informed the strategy insofar as all the key components and the strategy had already had input from the women. So we engaged women in everything from the physical design of the facilities to colour schemes and what we should name the house blocks within Stirling. One of the approaches we took was I brought an officer onto the project team who was a trained PTI, a physical education officer, and also a programmes officer. She delivered offending behaviour programmes. And what she did throughout the course of a summer was basically was allowed to draw keys in every establishment that held women. And she went in and she would run activities for women in those establishments. But while she was running activities for those women, she was engaging with them and getting feedback on everything from what does, what's good and what doesn't work about our visits arrangements, how could they be better, through to what does a place of safety mean for you. So, we had feedback from women on everything from practical elements right through to more conceptual ideas like what does psychologically safe spaces look like for you. So all of that kind of input from the women in custody fed into all the components of the strategy.
Thank you. And because the changes you're talking about, it's really like a big change, I would say, also like a culture, organizational change. So, how difficult was it, to get acceptance among the staff of SPS?
It was different at different places because the community custody units were brand new and they didn't have an existing staff group. We were bringing new staff in, so we advertised the posts. You really had to getting a post in the CCU was a competitive process. You had to apply and go through an interview process. And we began to shift towards values-based interviewing at that point because we understood that, 10 years working on in a prison, in a large male prison, wasn't necessarily going to prepare you for the unique challenges of working in a CCU. So we needed staff who had the right behaviours and values, as opposed to and an understanding of what we were trying to achieve. That was more important than operational experience. So when the CCUs opened, there was a whole raft of training and awareness put in place. We had a whole training program in place for them as well, but they really were a volunteer staff group who'd signed up to come on that journey. At Stirling, the national facility, it was slightly different because Stirling was built on the site of Cornton Vale, which has traditionally been the women's facility in Scotland, and we were bringing that staff group with us. So we had to take a different approach because that group of staff had worked with women for years and there was loads of good practice. You know, they were the experts in working with women. But there were also cultural elements that had evolved over years that we needed to change and stop. And trying to put training in place for them the way we did with the CCU staff wouldn't have worked because they've got loads of experience working with women, and it would have been probably quite patronizing. It would have turned them off a wee bit. So we took a different approach with them. It was more like a kind of action learning workshops with those staff, try and help them see directly how the things that they have learned to do naturally with women, the caring and compassionate approach and the different things that they do fit in with this trauma-based approach. You know, trauma-informed approaches might have been new language to them, but actually the caring, compassionate way that they look after women wasn't new. Dealing with women with really acute mental health issues and how they managed that wasn't new. It was just putting that framework and allowing them to see the links between what they did and how it fit the new framework, while at the same time also challenging some of the cultural or practical elements that needed to change as well. So it was about bringing those staff on the journey with us, and engagement started quite early, well before we ever moved across. And I'll be honest, it wasn't easy because you had all that fear among the staff as well. They didn't know what the new establishment was going to look like. They didn't know, were they going to work in the same place? Were they going to work with the same people? Were their shift patterns going to change? So there was real practical things that, you know, all those workplace hygiene factors that were inhibitors to, you know, we had to move past them before we could get staff bought into the more conceptual ideas. So, and it's an ongoing process. You know, Stirling's been open for a couple of years now. The team at Stirling could talk to it far better than I can now because I've been away. But it's an ongoing process. It's not something that changed overnight.
Definitely. And what was the role of the, you know, of the management or the headquarters like in this whole process? Because such cultural change
Yeah, I mean
needs strong support, I guess.
it did, and it needed key decisions taken at key times. You know, we had to have key decisions taken about recruitment and training. So the Scottish Prison Service has its own training college. So we had some dedicated resource from the training college who worked with us to help develop these new training packages and help develop these sessions and deliver these sessions. We needed support from the organisation round about key decisions on where we going to bring all the Corton Vale staff with us, because that wasn't, you know, that wasn't necessarily an absolute. We could have closed Corton Vale at an earlier stage potentially, distributed the staff and then reopened Stirling later and went through a similar process like we did with the CCUs. So there was different options in the table, really, we got those decisions by getting all of our senior directors in a room at the college for a week, basically, and laid out all the key decisions that had to be made by the end of that week to allow us to move forward. We basically had a week-long project board where we worked up various different options, various different suggestions relating to staff attendance, staff complements, training. Various different things, and we got all those key decisions made over the course of a week to allow us to move forward.
So you had like one intense week to process
We'd
them
reached
all.
a we'd reached a point where we'd developed different options for all of these things, and we got to the point where we can't move forward now till we get decisions on them. And the simplest and easiest way to do it was to get all those key decision makers in the room. And the way it worked was each day had a theme. So Monday was about staff complement and staff, you know, how many staff we were going to have in the facility, for example. The directors would come in the morning, they would set the scene, they'd go away and work. We would prepare the options, and then they'd come back in at night and we'd say, here's option one, two, and three. Here's what we think, and they would make a key decision on that. So that was the approach for each of the kind of key factors over the course of that week, and we went out of that week with a key direction and the ability to move forward. And some of it was really challenging because if you think about the staff resource at at Corton Vale, in particular, Corton Vale had a staff resource of I've not looked at these figures in a while, but it was about 160 operational staff, and the prison could hold, at that point, it was holding over 200 women. We were dropping down to 100 women in the New Stirling, but I was booting the staff complement up to 200. So, you know, there were some real questions about, well, wait a wee minute, why do you need that? And our answer was, you've not asked us to do this cheaply. You've asked us to do it right. You've asked us to be innovative and world leading. And this is the resource it's going to take to be able to embed these trauma-informed practices. Similarly with the CCUs, they've got quite a high staff complement for only being able to house 16 and 24 women. Some of that's practical, because there's no economies of scale when you're working with tiny units, but some of it is more conceptual, and it's about making sure we've got the right staff there to engage with the women.
And would you say, if you think, look back, was it really important that you had also really this political demand that made it easier also to, because you need to get the funding as well, so
yeah,
that was all like
that was critical. You know, as I said at the start, the government threw the gauntlet down to SPS and said, be innovative, be world leading, be transformative. So when we were coming back with ideas and concepts, we were pushing against an open door. When we announced community custody units, no one really knew what a community custody unit was. You know, we didn't have a clear idea in what that was. We knew that they were to be regional facilities. We knew that they were to be non-traditional custodial environments. But beyond that, we didn't know at that point, are we going to buy older buildings and convert them? Are we going to build something new? Are they going to have walls and fences? So every time we went back, we, what about this for an idea? We were pushing against an open door, and that's why we came to the small-scale detention houses, the CCUs that we currently have.
That's good.
And it meant the commitment was there financially as well, because we were striving to deliver government's vision. I mean, the overall capital cost for these buildings, I mean, I can't remember off the top of my head, but you're talking in the region of 100 million for Stirling and about 12 to 15 million per CCU just in capital to build them. And then you've got the running costs year on year on top of that with the high staff complements. So it was a big commitment from government, but they never sort of shrank away from that.
So even like there must have been like new elections, new governments within all these years, the support remained, and it still remains, right?
Yeah, well, one of the benefits in Scotland, justice is a devolved matter in Scotland, so it sits with the Scottish Parliament. It doesn't sit with Westminster. Yeah, yeah. And although there's been lots of changes in the Westminster government in recent years, the Scottish government has been fairly... it's been the same party in power quite a long time now, since around, I think it was 2011, maybe a bit earlier than that, the Scottish National Party came into power in Scotland, and they are still the government. So they've went through internal changes in their leadership, you know, changes in ministers, as will happen over that period in time. Policies have shifted, but they've remained the party in power for a substantial period of time in Scotland. So there has been that consistency.
Okay, that's interesting. That also makes it kind of easier, because you can have even those long-term plans, and you don't have like suddenly new people coming and changing everything. Okay, that's interesting. Yep. Okay, I think this was my last question. Thanks a lot.
Okay.